Outsourcing could make a big comeback under the Trump administration, but would it be a good idea? Not in the opinion of Donald Cohen, the founder and executive director of a California think tank, in the public interest. It looked at several privatization efforts at the state and local level, from Iowa Medicaid to school district bus services, and found they worsen inequality.
Privatization of public services and assets is a significant contributor to growing economic inequality and political inequality in the country.
Now, there have been repeated studies on the costs vis-a-vis federal and state and local versus private, and those are arguable because of the numbers people use. But inequality is something I haven't really heard about in as a output of privatization. What do you mean by that? And give me some examples of where that has happened.
Inequality is a hot topic these days, and so fundamentally it means people have economic inequality. We would describe simply as a growing gap between those with high wealth and high income and those that don't, those that have low wealth and low income, with a squeezed middle class. And so we're seeing that in all sorts of trends, regardless of, of our study. So what we mean real simply is, in terms of income, some people are making less and some people are making more. So, and that's a way you're saving money and forcing people into lower standard of living and, or in some cases, poverty. Those are public decisions, and that's what privatization does.
Well, you're talking about driving people that had been public employees and paying people doing that work less. Is that what you mean?
That's in that particular case, yes. I mean, if people are making less money, then they have less money to spend on their home, on their food, on their clothing, on their vacations, on their health care, on all the things. It's that simple. And so, it's in all of our interest for people to have a decent standard of living. And so if we outsource, big functions of, public functions, and people, the people who provide those services no longer can support their families or save enough for retirement or save enough for their kids' college funds, then we're all hurt.
Well, what about the taxpayers that are footing the bill? In theory, those savings get passed on.
Well, in theory, but again, I'll make two points, one of which is in some cases, people are wages and benefits go so low that people are eligible for public benefits, whether it be SNAP or reduced food and lunch in school, whether it be any number of public services, right? So we'll pay in the end as well. So that's one point. So that's sort of a false, we may be saving money at the moment, but we're actually still spending it as people who pay taxes to federal and state and local governments, not just one institution, not just by one public institution. But we also exist as an economy as a whole. And, many local governments, for example, rely on sales tax to pay and property tax to pay for schools and public services. So if people have less money in their pocket, they have less money to pay into the pot that provides all of these services. So I guess my point is we pay either way. And the question is, who pays?
We're speaking with Donald Cohen, founder and executive director of In the Public Interest. Can you give me an example of where a entity outsourced something that had been done by government employees and where the costs went so low that the people doing the work instead really were driven to that close to poverty level?
There are many examples. Food services, for example, that get outsourced in a prison. There's so many different kinds of examples.
I guess so,
landscaping
janitorial.
In a case of, you may have even heard of this. I think it was Michigan and Ohio outsourced the provision of food, the preparation of food in their prisons, in their state prisons, to Aramark, a national food service company, or food and other service company. Well, wages went from $22 an hour to $11 an hour. Okay, so I make a little bit more than that. I don't think I could survive on $11 an hour. 22, that's about $44,000 a year. That's not a great salary. $11 an hour is $22,000 a year. So, right there. And then other things happened as an outgrowth of that got some national press. The quality of the food went down. The quality of the workers, there was more turnover and fewer trained workers, and they ended up with maggots in their food. And that's not necessarily because that went from 22 to 11 is because they cut corners on the basics of providing a decent service.
Yes, you mentioned, I think, in this report also the National Zoo in Washington, which reported that a cashier there reported getting paid $8.25 an hour with no health insurance benefits, no sick days or vacation days.
That's right. Yeah, and that's, you know, what are we doing? That doesn't make any sense to us. These are, I mean, from any number of perspectives. One is if you're a good employer, which, you know, all these people are work for us, whether they work directly for the government, a government agency, or for a subcontractor. They do our work. Why would we not want to treat them well, help them get into have a decent standard of living, and which of course then creates high quality services? There's no free lunch.
Also, in your survey, you mentioned the local Washington Metropolitan Transit Authority, WMATA, which operates Metro and Metro Access and a lot of different programs. And it's been a big issue here locally because of service issues and the breakdown of maintenance and so forth. In particular, you mentioned this, and it's partially federally funded, but also by the jurisdictions that it serves. And you mentioned the Metro Access workers, where they give rides to people to get to Metro facilities that can't get there on their own. What happened
there?
Right.
That's right. Again, we think it's important to start with values. I mean, economics matters, what we can afford matters, but if we value a service enough to provide a service for the elderly or disabled people to be able to get to the mass transit, to the metro, then the people who provide that service ought to be able to live a decent life. We ought not to be funding and we are providing public services by forcing people to live in poverty. That's not a solution. That should be completely off the table.
The Obama administration has put out executive orders so that federal contractors must pay a certain floor level of wages. I think it's $10 an hour. That seems to cover federal people, if in fact it's actually taken hold. But it's not something that's happening much at the state and local level, or what have you seen there?
Well, at the local level, there's been lots of cities around the country have passed what they refer to as living wage laws, which tend to apply to contracts, say city contracts or county contracts, that have raised wages. I mean, there was some that have gone higher than $10, $12, $13, $14 an hour. So some cities have done that. I'm in California. I know the state of California has done that for certain classes of subcontracted workers, I think janitorial. But there's too many that haven't. It'd be better if it was done federally so there was a level playing field. Some could argue that there are different standards of living, reasonably so, that in different states, so a state can take care of it. But again, it goes back to the same principle. They're providing the services that we all want and depend on, then we should make sure they can live a decent enough life.
So bottom line is, we pay one way or another, and it's probably more economical and socially better for government to continue to pay people the wages it pays for these types of jobs.
That's exactly right.
Donald Cohen is executive director of In the Public Interest. Find a link to the report and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.